What's going on, everybody? Daryl Frater, the club CEO here, and we have another amazing episode of the My DJ Story podcast brought to you by the Club app, the number one platform for DJs to build their career online. Today, we have DJ Renegade, who's going to tell us his story of how he got into the DJ business and how has it been going so far. Brother, can you please introduce yourself to the people where you're from?
Sure. I grew up in Wayne, New Jersey. I started collecting 12-inch vinyl because you couldn't hear the extended versions of the songs back then any other way. So I bought one 1200. As fate would have it, I had an accident. I used to have a scooter and I had a vehicular accident. So my neck was kind of like weak, and they said that if I tried to wake up, I could snap my neck and die. So I had like a friend that was staying with me. And then I started watching like Jam Master Jay, you know, and I was watching him cut and scratch the records and everything. And I had the same record. I had the Run DMC record. So I had the 1200. So one day I just started pretending like I was Jam Master Jay. And I was like, wow, this is, I could do the same. This is great. You know what I mean? So then I bought another 1200. I bought a mixer. And then I just, it started from there, really, you know. Now, in my basement of the house I grew up in, my dad had built this like little lounge. I don't even know why, because no one ever came over. But we had a bar with like a dance floor and sofas and stuff. So I started charging the kids in my school admission, and I would throw parties on the weekends down there. You know, and they'd be down there like 16, 17 years old drinking vodka and stuff. And I was like, all right, whatever. I hope I don't get busted for this. You know what I mean? But yeah, I would DJ down there, and that's how I got started, you know.
Nice, man. No, that's super interesting, man. Your life at the party, throwing the parties for kids in your high school. And, you know, how did, you know, things go from there? You know, what was the journey in your DJ career after those initial parties that you were hosting?
So I started doing some private parties, you know, weddings and stuff like that. But I really wanted to do the DJing. So I came back here and I was like, well, what am I going to do? All my friends are in college. I'm not. So you know, I just started building up my record collection. I was selling mixtapes at the time. And then a friend of mine called me up and he said, listen, I'm opening a club. One of the kids I went to school with, he was 20 years old. You could be the DJ, you could live upstairs, you know. Okay, sure, whatever. So I was working like 5 nights a week. And then I became the feedback director for Record Pool Business Center with Eddie Rivera. And Eddie Rivera was throwing all these industry parties and stuff. So I started networking with all the people at the labels and the artists and everything. At the time, was freestyle was the big thing. And then I started DJing some of the feedback parties. And then from that, I met people in Manhattan and I started playing, you know?
Wow. No, that's super exciting, man. And one thing that we like to focus on this podcast is, you know, what are some of the things that led to these opportunities? You know, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are people that are interested in either starting their DJ career or are in it and want to take their DJ business to the next level. You know, what are some things that you did that, you know, allowed you to gain access to these opportunities? Because like not many people are able to just jump into these things, you know, shortly after jumping into the DJ business. So, you know, what kind of led credit to your success?
So the Record Pool, Eddie Rivera's Record Pool Business Center. They also had Sphinx Entertainment in there. CNC Music Factory was there at the time. And I was dating a girl at the club, and one day she was like, oh, we got to go to this club, The Limelight. And I was like, The Limelight, I don't know, whatever. I never heard of it. So we went, and these people are dressed crazy and they're playing all this energetic music, you know, the EDM music and stuff. And I was like, wow, this is great, you know? And then we were talking and she was like, one day she goes, I don't even know why I'm dating you. You'll never be a DJ at The Limelight. So that was it. I said, I'm going to become the main floor DJ. And until then, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to hear nothing from you, you know? So then I spent like, I don't know how many years, about 2 years maybe, just working my way up. And they kept trying to put me in the side rooms. I did the side rooms like once or twice. And they kept trying to book me. I said, no. I said, I want main floor. It's main floor or nothing. And then one day, the guy who was doing Friday's repeat, he said, look, we got an opening on Thursdays. Brand new promoters, Michael Francis and Mark Anthony. Could be your thing. You'll be doing the main floor. And I was like, sold. Let's do it. About 2 days later, I found out I was having my daughter. And I was like, whoa, you know. And then I had an opportunity to do this upscale adult club called Laced in West Nyack. I paid a lot of money. And then my friend from college, Rob Corbett, he needed a break, and he was a great DJ. We used to do a lot of college parties together. So I'm like, Rob, congratulations, you're the new main floor DJ at Limelight, you know? So then he took the spot at Limelight. I was doing the adult clubs, the high-end ones. I was making a lot of money. I didn't care, you know what I mean? And then he ended up blowing up. You know, he switched it from techno to house, there was a bad drug scene at Limelight at the time, and they switched it around with the house music, you know, got a drinking crowd back in and everything. And then he wanted to be a cop. So when he got the job at the cop, with the police department, he couldn't be a DJ no more. So he's like, you know what? You got your spot back, but now it's that tunnel, not Limelight. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I started doing the tunnel. So Flex was doing Sundays and I was doing Saturdays. And it was great fun, you know, but I really wanted to produce and make music. That's what I wanted to do. So I was spending all my money on equipment and gear. Finally, I got enough gear to start making music, you know.
Awesome, so, man. And what are some things that you particularly love about being a DJ that kind of kept you motivated and driven throughout this whole process?
I think the social aspect of it, networking with people. I mean, I could have a drink one day with Mark Anthony. You know, Vin Diesel was one of my security guys. I was DJing when Joe Pesci gave him his break, and now you know what happened with him, you know. And of course, you meet tons of girls, which is great, you know. Who does have a problem with that? Nobody, right? But you get to travel, you see different things, you know, and it's a great life. Now it's a lot different, I think, though, because now everything's numbers, and I don't like that. Before it was skill, you know what I mean? It's like, well, how many followers do you have, and how many people are going to show up, and blah, blah, blah. And you can be a average DJ, but if your numbers are big, no one cares. And I think that that's a negative, you know?
Understood. Yeah, no, it kind of has transitioned from just having the skill, but how do you build a brand and build a business around your skill? You know, I think that that's kind of the differentiator that we're seeing today. You know, well, what are some things that you're doing, particularly with your brand as DJ Renegade, to stand yourself out amongst all the other DJs that exist?
Acting. You know, I'm doing Law and Order sometimes. I did Evil on CBS. I did The Irishman. I've got a couple shows coming up where I've got speaking roles. So I think that that helps a lot, because the problem I have right now is with Facebook and Instagram. I have a trademark on my name, but any idiot can go and be like, I'm DJ Renegade, and Zuckerberg doesn't want to take the profiles down. So it's like you can't even sue them because they have the 230 status. So it's like, what do you do, right? So to get the blue check mark, it's like the bigger the things that I can do overall, I think that that helps the brand. So the acting, I think, right now is big for me. And then, you know, I do have a label called NYC Tracks. I was the DJ during that whole Hustlers craziness they made the movie about. So, you know, we all got fired for no reason. I didn't know what was going on. So I had to stop the label at that time because I had to readjust my money and stuff. But I want to start doing that again. I think making music helps a lot as well, you know?
Yeah, I think that's dope that you're doing acting as well. You know, a lot of DJs I know are super talented at many things, and it just kind of shows just how great DJs are in the whole entertainment space in general. You know, I think that your acting also exposes you to a lot of interesting people. So it kind of builds your network and actually builds your brand, because you have a strong network of individuals, you know, that may be celebrities, big actors, and people that can definitely help build your brand. I think that's also a competitive advantage that you show as DJ Renegade. In regards to like some of the things that you're doing in regards to your DJ career going forward, you know, where do you see yourself, you know, in the next couple of years, or kind of what's your primary focus today?
Well, I'm working on a DJ, I can't get into too much, but a DJ movie, and I'm going to have something to do with that, and that's going to help. I have a book that I'm involved with right now that's going to help. And then, you know, once this COVID nonsense is done with, I want to start traveling. But, really, I think the label, you know, because when you're putting out your own music and if people are into the music, that helps bring them out. You know what I mean? Plus, I mean, I do have the skills. So when people see me play live, that automatically builds up people, you know, because I don't care how many followers you have. If you can't deliver, what good is it, you know?
Definitely, man. And a lot of these people that listen to podcasts are trying to learn from other people like you. You know, you've had a great and successful journey in the DJ industry. You know, what are some things that you know now that you wish that you knew when you're just starting out?
I think about music structure, keys, things like that. I listen to so many old mixtapes that I thought were great and they're not. You know what I mean? The way that the transitions were, or the songs that are different keys or overlaid and stuff like that. And I think that once you study how to learn, you learn how to make music, that helps you to be a better DJ, because you understand all of that. You know what I mean? Like, I always understood, here's a break, here's an outro, here's an intro, here's a chorus, here's a verse, whatever. You know, I understood all of that. So, I mean, I was always okay with mixing, but I mean, I'm a lot better now, you know? Other than that, I think really you said I got the Mike Tyson hat on. When I first came out, that's why I used to try to like make myself into, like, I wanted to come out and just blow everybody away. You know what I mean? And the crowd, they were into it because, you know, what had happened was I got a job at Watts Music. Watts Music was an import-export operation. So all the vinyl came in and out of Watts Music and a couple others, but mostly Watts Music. So if six of something came into the country, I could grab it. So they had these record stores and the buyers would come in like once a week and they put stuff under the shelves and certain DJs would come in and they'd be like, ooh, look, we have goodies for you, you know? I was there all day from the time they opened, all night. No one could touch the kind of music that I had. Nobody. It didn't matter if you traveled all over the world. I had access to music nobody had. So that was incredible. And that was my selling point with Limelight and Tunnel. You know what I mean? But I don't remember what the original question was. But I mean, as far as myself goes, I just want to really make new music, get out there, do the acting, travel, have the label, you know, and blow it up that way. And then let the social media follow rather than buying the social media, trying to hope people follow it. I'd rather follow it off the music and off the DJing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense, man. And it seems like you're having a lot of fun, man. And I'm super excited to hear more of your journey and your story. I think that it's super important, you know, for other people to know, you know, the lifestyle that other DJs are living. I think that it's very interesting. It gives them aspiration to what they can look up to and kind of show the diverse things that you can do as a DJ. You don't have to stay in one box. There's multiple avenues or multiple things that you can do in your DJ career, and you've shown that you can do it and do it very well. So kudos to you for your success and everything you've accomplished. I'm super excited to hear a little bit more about, you know, how you got the name DJ Renegade. You know, most DJs have a super exciting or interesting story about how they got their name. I'm always curious to see, you know, how you chose or gotten your name.
So when I first started trying to do this stuff, the DJs that were playing in big clubs had catchy names. You know, you had Jelly Bean, who did the Madonna stuff. You know, you had like Repeat at the Limelight, you know. And I was like, well, maybe I should get a catchy name or something. And I was like, but I want it to be something that reflects my personality, you know. So I was a little crazy when I was a kid. Like, you know, I used to act up in school and stuff. And, you know, I was skinny when I was a kid. So if someone tried to pick on me or something, I'd crack them. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't care if I had to go to jail or whatever. I was like, I don't care. You know, I was a little crazy, you know. Obviously, I've matured now, but... And then one day I just happened to be in this mode of trying to think of a name. And I was listening to an old Africa Bambaataa record, Renegades of Funk. And I dropped the needle right where there was like an acapella part. And it just went like, Renegade, Renegade. And I'm like, Renegade. So I talked to Frankie Bones. Frankie Bones and Lenny D were traveling DJs at the time. There was no internet. So I was like, do you know anyone using DJ Renegade? You know, you guys traveled over the world. And they were like, no. And I was like, all right, well. So what I first started doing on the flyers, I'd put like, you know, Robert Renegade Simonton or Bobby Renegade. You know, I was like trying to see if anyone would come out of the woodwork and sue me or send me a cease and desist, and no one ever did. So I was like, all right, DJ Renegade. I trademarked it and that was it, you know.
Awesome, awesome. And I don't hear too many times that DJs are trademarking your name. So I think that's really dope that you did it. And do you think that it's advisable for other DJs to go ahead and trademark their name and kind of walk us through that process of doing it?
Sure. See, where I went wrong in a way is I didn't do marca registrada. Marca registrada is you own the entire world. I only own the USA. It definitely helps in the USA because no one else can use it. And then, you know, even though people do try, I eventually go after them. And you got to get the FBI involved and cease and desist letters. And if they still act up, you have to take them to court and everything. And the benefit to that is they can't grow. So even if they keep persisting, they eventually fizzle out because they can't really grow because they only get so far and you just knock them out. You know what I mean? But the downside to that is you have to keep moving forward or you could lose the trademark. If you don't police your own trademark, you can lose it. So what ends up happening is you could send someone a cease and desist letter and they're like, all right, I'm going to use it anyway. All right, let's go to court. $10,000-$15,000 out of your pocket, $20,000 out of your pocket to sue somebody that's living in their mom's basement who might not be able to pay you back. So that's the only thing I don't like about it. You know what I mean? So you always want to try to not go to court. But if you go to court, I mean, you're going to win, especially if you own it for a certain amount of years. It's called undisputable status, where no one else can win. It's just like a parrot talking. Doesn't matter what they say, you lose, you know? But it's expensive, you know? That's what I don't like about it.
That's super good advice, because you know, you're educating even me on trademarks, because you know, with my brand, The Club, on our new platform for live stream DJs, you know, I have that trademark, and just hearing this right here gives me more insight on what I need to do to make sure that my name is protected and maintained over the years. So thank you. I'm sure you dropped a lot of information that a lot of other people didn't know as well. So thank you for sharing that with us.
But it's annoying too, though, because you can't call a cop. It's not like the cops are going to show up, go up to the guy who's DJing, pull up his ID, throw him in jail. You have to call the feds. And you call the feds and they're chasing terrorists and they're chasing the 7 million illegal Nike shoes that are coming in over the boats. You know what I mean? And you're like, well, I'm a DJ and this guy's doing this. And they're like, we're busy. I'm like, well, so who do I call? There's no one to call. You know what I mean? So it's like, then you're left just suing the person. It's super annoying, you know?
Yeah, understood. And but it's super interesting because you got to protect your brand. At the same time, you got to be profitable. You got to make sure that it makes sense for your business, because at the end of the day, you know, it's really about, you know, doing what you love, but also about making it sustainable and making money. So I feel you on that. And great job of what you're doing. And you're a true professional. You know, you make sure that you do things the right way. You do things that are super advantageous to your business and your brand. I'm super excited that we're on this call and hearing your story on the My DJ Story podcast. I want to jump into, you know, the present day. Like you mentioned, like we're in COVID right now and things are a little bit different. You know, how has COVID-19 pandemic affected your career as a DJ and some of the other things you're doing?
So I have always a base in the adult clubs. I work like 2-3 nights a week in the adult clubs, because this way I can cover my bills or whatever. And then it gives me flexibility to turn down or accept gigs in regular clubs, you know, because you don't want to get jerked around. Some guy's going to book you for no money. I'm not doing that, you know. So because of that, my residency is on pause. And then I did have some acting gigs that were totally canceled. I played for Halloween at a party in the village. But it was like, it's almost like dealing drugs, you know. It's like, who are you? Okay, we're going to let you in, you know. And it's like, you're sneaking around and everything just to play a party is crazy, you know? But no, I'm excited for the future. Like I said, you know, I've done some remixes that run the Billboard Top 5. I definitely know how to make music. I just want to start growing the label again, really, and just getting out there again and using the social media to my advantage again. But it's just so hard. I mean, like, it's a learning process with social media all the time. You know, you express one thing, half the people agree with you, half the people hate you. So it's like you're always trying to find the middle ground, because you want everyone to like you as an artist, right? But you still want to keep your integrity and be able to voice your opinion at the same time. So social media is very tricky, you know, but you have to have it nowadays.
Definitely, man. It's definitely how you create a presence online and how you build, you know, relationships and build your brand. You know, that's the medium that's currently the way that people connect. So got to figure it out. But at the end of the day, you always got to be you. You know what I mean? You can't try to conform to be likable by all people, because it's not going to happen. But if you always are your authentic self, people that, you know, align with who you are, they will come to you, they will love you, and they will support you, as long as you just keep on doing what you do and being a great person and being a great DJ. So I appreciate you for what you're doing.
Well, like I said, though, the market registrata thing is big, because if you don't own the whole world, what happens is somebody else is established in another country. So right now, there's probably like 8 DJ Renegades. There's 2 in England, 3 in England, whatever. There's 1 in Australia, Japan, Canada. So it's like, it becomes confusing when you look at social media, because it's like, well, which one are you? So I think that marca registrata, it's a big deal. Like, if you're going to trademark it, just do it right from the beginning. Some of the countries you actually have to be working in to get it. Some of them you could just buy them because you own the country you're in already. But I would definitely recommend to anybody, if they can, to do the marca registrata from day one, because you want to own the whole world. Because now with social media, it's one territory. You know what I mean? Before, it'd be like, well, I own the US. You can't advertise here. You can't promote here. Well, now with the internet, it's one territory. You know what I mean? So if you're not marca registrata, why even do it?
Makes sense. Great advice, man. I'm super excited. And let's jump right into the lightning round. Are you ready?
Sure.
Describe your DJ setup, hardware and software.
I use various controllers, but I use a PC-based virtual DJ setup, and that works well for me. I don't like Serato. I hate it like a passion, because you can't set the cue points easily. Virtual DJ, you hit the button, there's the cue point, you know? As far as private parties go, at this point, I'm renting out anything big. I do have a smaller setup for weddings and stuff like that. I used to own a big setup, but when I was doing Hustler for 8 years, I'm like, why am I paying for storage? I got rid of it, you know? As far as equipment goes for production right now, I just have the keyboard and I have all my soft synths and stuff like that. And I work out of different places to get what I need on top of that. You know, I'm nothing crazy, you know, but eventually I'll get some more stuff. It's just, you know, where I live now, I can't really mix down properly here because I have like roommates and stuff. So I didn't go too crazy here, you know, but that's pretty much it. You know, basic stuff, lights, speakers, mics, just your basic private party stuff. You know what I mean? But I'm usually in clubs, so I don't have to have a lot of stuff, you know.
Besides yourself, who's your favorite DJ?
I think Funkmaster Flex, to be honest with you, because he has a good personality. He's very positive. I've worked with him in the past. You know, he moves the crowd. Yeah, I'd say Flex.
What has been your favorite party or event you've DJed at and why?
There was a party that I did for Viacom. I worked with Viacom a couple different times, but it was a VH1 Save the Music event, and it was me, Maroon 5, Space Hog, and then Bill Clinton was an MC in the other part of it, and then Mariah Carey, I think, was the MC in one of the other parts of it as well. And we raised, like, I think $150,000 for instruments for classrooms. And I think that would be my favorite one because that's the largest caliber event that I've done. You know, I mean, obviously, as far as heads go, I did do the Puerto Rican Day Parade in Manhattan one time, and there was, I think, like 600,000 people or something, or 300,000 people or something like that. As far as heads go, I mean, that's the biggest one. But that VH1 one, there was something special about that evening, you know?
Who's the most interesting person you've met through DJing?
That's a good one. I think Mark Anthony. Yeah, Mark Anthony, I met at Palladium. You know, we got along really well. Every now and then I'll see him up in the gym in Manhattan, you know. Or I could say Vin Diesel too, though, because Vin Diesel I worked with for a couple of years. So he's interesting as well. You know, I'd probably leave it at those two, you know.
What's one thing that you hate about live streaming as a DJ?
Haven't done it yet. I'm going to be doing it with you for the first time. So I really couldn't answer that. But I went from watching other people. I don't like it when the camera's like up the guy's nose. Like, make it look nice at least, you know what I mean? I think Facebook DJing is a waste because they just shut you down halfway into your set. What good is that, you know? But I've seen some good ones on Twitch. I think the Twitch setup is really nice. Your setup is nice also, you know?
Shout out DJs you know personally whose story needs to be shared on this podcast.
I'd probably say Corey Jasper. He's a DJ out of Brooklyn that I worked with for a long time. You know, he did a lot of the clubs and lounges in Brooklyn and in Manhattan for a long time. I'd stick with that. You know, I've been working mostly in adult clubs for a while now. Sophia Lynn's a good female DJ. She's all over the country. You know, she'd definitely be someone interesting. I've worked with her briefly. You know, probably those two.
Awesome. Looking forward to hearing their stories. And where can people find you online or in person if you're still doing events?
Sure, djrenegade.com.
Perfect, brother. Hey, this has been a great interview on the My DJ Story podcast. Everyone, check out DJ Renegade. Follow him. He's an amazing brother doing some very interesting things. And thank you, brother. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Are you a DJ? Well, we want to hire you as one of our official The Club Virtual DJs. We've been working hard to source hundreds of paid virtual gigs, and we need DJs of all kinds that are interested in getting paid to curate virtual events for our clients. Whether you're a new DJ just getting started or a veteran in the game, we have paid gig opportunities for you. Text I'm in to 609-201-1027 to get notified for paid gig opportunities from The Club. Tell a friend. We look forward to working with you. Now back to the podcast.